Welcome back. Now I am taking your legal questions here. Here's how this works. You give us a call if you have a legal question about anything that you've been pondering, maybe puzzling about for friends or family, or if there's a legal issue in the news that you're wondering about or wanted me to comment on, give us a call, 312-981-7200. You will get my producer, Andrew. He's very nice. And he will take a quick synopsis of your question, and we'll get you on the air. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Roland. Hi, Roland. Welcome to WGN.
Good afternoon, Counselor. Okay. All right. I have a question about a recent lawsuit filed in Cook County. Okay. The city of Chicago, along with an anti-gun organization, they went into the Circuit Court of Cook County to sue a gun shop that was in Indiana for allegedly illegally selling guns or distributing guns. And I was wondering, how can that work across the state line?
I can't tell you exactly that I've read this lawsuit. I've read about this lawsuit. And I think the idea, Roland, is that because the criminals from the Chicago area know that they can go across the state line to Indiana and buy guns from this gun shop, which they're alleging that he's the owner is. They know that these guns are being given to people who are straw buyers, people who are buying these guns and distributing it to people who shouldn't be getting them, and that those guns are being used to commit crimes in Chicago. And I don't remember the exact statistic on it, but I think there were like hundreds of crimes in Chicago that were directly traced to the guns that were purchased in that shop. So your question is, how can we go across state lines? And the answer is because the guns from that shop are affecting what's going on in Chicago. I think that's how they're tracing it. Does that make sense?
All right. Shouldn't they have gone into federal court either in Indiana Northern District or Chicago or Illinois Northern District? Wouldn't that be a more suitable venue?
And this is real technical, but it could be that when the gun owner defends the case, the gun owner can ask the case to be transferred to federal court for that reason, because there's diversity. I don't know. And that gets real technical, and that's a real strategic defense. So I don't know. But that's a good question. That's a good question. But thank you. Thank you for that comment and the question. Roland, have a good day.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to Carol. Hi, Carol. Welcome to WGN. You have a question.
Yes, hi. I have a question. I wondered if there is a person that your previous guest, Andrea, would not represent. Is there something that somebody would be accused of that never represent?
You know, Carol, I had that question on my list and I never got to it. So brilliant minds think alike. If Andrea is driving home in her Uber today, my guess is she's going to say no. My guess is that she's going to say that it doesn't really, you know, that the facts of the case, unless it was someone she couldn't get along with or someone who was so disrespectful or so confrontational that she didn't think she could do a good job. My guess, in having read her book, that she would say she would try her darnest to help anybody who was accused of any crime.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, after listening to her. I'm definitely going to get her book. And thank you for having her on your show.
Thank you, Carol, so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
You too. Bye.
All right. Let's go to, do we have time for another question? Yes, we sure do. 981-7200. The phone lines are wide open. Bob, welcome to WGN.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is basically, am I correct or incorrect? As I understood the decision on the Roe v. Wade, that the Supreme Court simply said that this does not belong at the Supreme Court level and should be at the state's level. And that gives all 50 states an opportunity to codify laws based on what the people in that state want. You have Governor Pritzker has said Illinois will be a friendly state to those people who want that. And then so did, I think, the New York governor, et cetera. And then there are states that are like Texas or Oklahoma or Missouri that are very unfriendly to that. And that if you want to change that, what you do is you elect different people who then better represent the will of America. That's right. What I thought happened. Am I incorrect or correct?
No, you're correct. And you know what, Andrew, can you put Bob on hold just because there's a little static here? But Bob, I'm going to answer your question, okay? Yes, that's exactly correct. What the Supreme Court said was, we're not making any ruling, we're not making legislation. What we're doing is we're striking down the idea that there is a constitutional right to an abortion. And therefore, the states are free to make their own determinations about whether there is abortion, what is a legal abortion, what is an illegal abortion. And you're right. And the idea would be that the legislators of this particular states will have that in their hands. And the idea is, if you don't like it, vote for somebody else who will create different laws. And I guess the argument on the other side of that is the right to choice of for a woman's body, is that something that is so ingrained in our inalienable rights, like a right to privacy, a right to vote, a right to travel, right to freedom, a right not to be illegally searched and seized. Is that part of the constitutional right, even though it wasn't enumerated in the Constitution back all those years ago? And I think Roe versus Wade said that it is an inalienable right, much like the Supreme Court said that the right to marry the person of your choice is also an inalienable right. So there's what the issue is. Is it a federal constitutional right? The Supreme Court spoke up and said, no, it isn't, because it wasn't enumerated in the Constitution and for other reasons. And therefore, Bob, you're absolutely correct. It's up to the states to determine what goes on from here on out. Let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike. Welcome to WGN.
Hi there. I'm an entrepreneur. I want to create something and get a mess, you know, produced. And I'm wondering, this is a copycat world we live in. How can I protect my idea from being stolen without asking people to sign non-compete, non-disclosure agreements? I mean, once I get it up and running, somebody's going to copy me sooner or later. That's the person that's going to stick a knife in my back. How do I protect myself?
So you have an idea for, is it a product?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you said you need the non-disclosure agreements, right? You said you wanted to use the non-disclosure agreements?
I do, and I don't. I mean, I'm just wondering, how do I protect myself besides using non-compete, non-disclosure agreements from being ripped off and stabbed in the back?
No, you absolutely have to. And I would say you can go online and get a good non-disclosure agreement, or you can hire an attorney to give you one. But I think the idea is that you have to. If you're going to be disclosing your idea in any great detail, you have to have them sign to say that they're not going to disclose it, and it has to be very thoroughly, what they can and can't do with the information. Now, just Mike, who are you intending to talk to about this, and in what regard? Like, these are employees, or these are people who are going to help you with your idea, or tell me what you're thinking?
Both. The idea has not been invented yet. It's not been done before. And another question I want to ask is, instead of going through, non-disclosure agreements with hundreds of words of legalese, can I print up my own statement and have people sign it? Would that carry the same weight?
Yes, and you can go online and look up non-disclosure agreements, and there's plenty of good ones. In fact, I just drafted one for a client of mine, and I have a file of them. So I looked up in my file ones that I've used in the past, and I've picked, you pick different phrases that fit your suit your needs, and you can put that together yourself. I always say if it's something really important that you should have a lawyer draft it up, because you want to make sure it's as tight as possible. possible, because you don't want to have to sue somebody. Suing someone for this kind of thing could cost over $100,000. So you want to make sure it's as tight as possible and that the signatures are, you know, in the right regard. So meaning if it's a corporation that you're talking to, is it an individual you're talking to? You want to make sure all of that is covered. So, but yeah, you can do it yourself. You can do almost anything yourself. I usually don't recommend using online forms just because there may be something that you don't know that the lawyer can tell you, this will also protect you. And obviously, you're going to want to incorporate, right? You're going to do that before you start anything.
Well, speaking of that, I've never started a company before. I've always been somebody else's employee. I know there's LLC, INC, period, et cetera. What type of company, what should I put at the end of the name of my company to make sure that it's all legal, like INC, period, LLC? I don't know which one to go with.
Okay. Mike, I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to answer it. I'm going to go to a break. And I think the answer to that question is you need to talk to a lawyer because there are LLCs, there are corporations, and what form of business entity you use depends on a lot of different things. And so that's something that you should consult with an attorney. And yes, you can do that yourself. You can incorporate yourself and you can LLC yourself. But again, it's something that if you want to do this right, you probably need a lawyer. And if you need a lawyer, I have a couple of people who do business formation and NDAs, and give me a call at my office and I'll be happy to refer you to a person who has a lot of experience in that. My number at the office is 312-332-7800. When we come back, we'll be taking more of your legal questions on WGN. This is your chance to ask legal questions. I don't always know the answer, but I can hopefully steer you in the right direction. And if for some reason you don't get through here, or maybe you want a little more private discussion, you can always call me at my office, or better yet, email me and I'll give out that information. 312-332-7800. And my email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com. And what you do when you email me, give me a few facts, tell me what your situation is, what county you're in, just so I know what area I might need to refer you to, a lawyer to in that area. And give me a few facts so I know what you're looking for, and I will get back to you. I get back to everybody. Maybe I'll send you a link or someone to help you, or a referral to an attorney that concentrates his or her practice in your area. Estate planning, criminal, contracts, business formation, Mike, who called before, happy to refer you to somebody good. Because, you know, it's hard to pick a lawyer. It's hard to find a place to find a good lawyer, because when you Google a lawyer, you're going to get the people who have paid money to have their names pop up first. You certainly don't want to hire someone because of a billboard or somebody whose name is on a park bench. So it is hard to find somebody who you know is reliable and trustworthy, who's experienced and would suit your needs. And again, there's different lawyers for different things, and we're in a very big city and a big surrounding area. So we have people who concentrate their practices in just one area, whether it's divorce or real estate closings or foreclosures or personal injuries, medical malpractice. Lawyers don't do all of those things. Most lawyers, in fact, don't do all of those things. So you're going to need to find somebody who has good experience in their particular field, just like anything. Let's go to the phone lines here, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Ruth. Hi, Ruth. Thank you for holding. What's your legal question?
Hi, Karen. You're such a thoughtful and intelligent woman. This has been on my mind to ask you for a long time.
Well, thank you.
Years ago, I had a lawsuit, the only one I've ever had in my life, and I pray to God I will never have another one. But I had a condominium that had mold in it, and I had to move out and blah, blah. So anyway, the lawyers that I hired, which were downtown in Chicago on Michigan Avenue, they made me I'm a nurse, and they made me take time off from work to come down and work for them, because they said there was too much paperwork. And so I had to take time off from work and then pay for horrendous parking fees on Michigan Avenue several times, at least seven times. And I just wondered if that was a common practice.
Well, I guess I want to know, what is it that the lawyers wanted you to do? Did they want you to go through certain documents? And tell me exactly what you were doing for those days. That's a long time and a number of days to be working on your case.
Oh, right. They just had me, I guess there was a lot of paperwork, and they made me, like, go through things and read things and, you know, sometimes they made me, like, copy things and put things in order, and you know, I just didn't know if that was a common practice.
Doesn't sound at all normal to me. This is something I'm going to kind of broaden the topic, Ruth. So for people who are out there who may have a lawsuit, whether it's a divorce or a personal injury case or what have you, you know, lawyers will give you homework. We'll say to you, you know, listen, you have to produce all of your medical records to show that you were actually injured. Or in a divorce case, you have to produce 3 years of financial documents, including credit card statements and bank statements and the like. And so, yes, you have to do that work, but usually you can do it at home, and usually you can do it on the computer, or maybe you have to go into your bank and get past statements. And that is something that I regularly tell my clients they have to do. Of course they have to do that, because that's part of the process of disclosing information so both parties can prepare for a trial. But for you to come in and organize things, for you to come in and copy things, that's kind of, I mean, you're not their paralegal. And that doesn't make any sense. And certainly the number of days you're talking about is really, did you say it was 7 days? Or how many days did you come in?
At least seven different times.
Yeah.
Again, this was a long time ago, 7 years ago.
That does not sound right to me. However, I do want to warn people who have lawsuits that it is time consuming. And, you know, if you have a deposition, for instance, which is a sworn statement under oath, you may have to come in and talk to your lawyers and prepare for it. And you may have to review voluminous documents maybe that were produced by the other side. So you do have some responsibilities that take up time. So much of it now, though, can be done via, you know, documents on email, of course. And a lot of it can be done via Zoom. So that doesn't sound right to me, Ruth. I'm just curious, how did your lawsuit work out?
Well, actually, you know, I was, it's part of the days that I had to take off was to talk with the judge that was hearing my case. I never, ever saw the judge, ever. I would sit down there for hours and hours, and I would never see the judge. They also made me do all these inspections. But there was never any written reports for these inspections, and I asked for written reports so I could see them and go over them. And they said I didn't need to know that, that they knew it, because they had talked to the people who did. You know, I just, the whole thing was like so crazy to me.
Well, you know, I don't really know how to answer it, because I don't know all of the facts there, but it does sound strange. And I one of the things that I tell people, when you have a lawyer, no matter what kind of case it is, you know, you have to be, and I'm not saying you weren't, Ruth. I'm not telling you that you did something wrong, because you didn't. Your lawyer should be telling you why all the time that you're doing these things. But if you said to the lawyer, listen, I've been doing this for 7 days. I've taken 7 days off of work. Is there some way that you can do this so that I don't have to spend this time? I can't afford to do this. You know, why am I copying things? And, you know, you got to have to address them. I mean, I don't say to do it in a way that's so confrontational that you lose your relationship with your lawyer, but that doesn't sound right. And it sounds like I can't really explain it. So
no, of course not. Yeah,
but thank you.
You know,
that's just a good lesson to everyone to really question and, you know, in a nice way. Why am I doing this? You know, but I don't have a good explanation for you, Ruth, but thank you for the call.
Thank you for answering me, Karen.
Right.
I appreciate it.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. Let's go to Robert. One more before we take a break, but 981-7200. Robert, welcome to WGN.
Hi. Thank you. I'm involved in my brother died, and I have to find out how to do probate and whether it's necessary. What requires me? Is there a law that says I have to file probate?
I'm sorry about your brother's death. I'm going to put you on hold, because there seems to be a little bit of an echo here. Can you put him on hold, Andrew? Thank you. So the question is going to be, and I'll get you back on in a minute, I'm going to need to know the following. Did he have a will? And if he didn't have a will, what was the nature of his estate? Did he have, how much approximately did he have in assets? So let's get you back on. Robert? Robert, did you?
There was a durable power of attorney and also financial affairs power of attorney. Now, the assets exceed $200,000.
Okay, I'm sorry. And did you say he had a will or he didn't have a will?
He did not have a specific written will. But in the living trust, it said that here's the instructions.
Oh.
And upon during my life and upon my death.
Yes. Okay, so he had a trust, and that's good. That's a good thing, because that avoids probate, for the most part, for, you know, in generally speaking. I can't give you specific legal advice, but the whole point of a living trust is to take it out of probate, meaning that, that your brother put together this trust that gave direction to the trustee to do certain things when he died, like gather the assets and then pay off the debts and then distribute the money to the people who were noted in the trust. So are you the trustee? Were you listed as the trustee, Robert? Okay. Robert?
Yes.
Were you listed as the trustee?
I was, yes.
Okay. So then you have to do what the living trust says you need to do, which is to gather the assets, probably pay off the debts, and then distribute the money. If you need help with an attorney to do that, you should call my office and I can get you someone who maybe can just do a quick consultation with you and tell you exactly what needs to be done pursuant to the language of that trust. Okay?
All right.
All right. Good luck to you. I'm going to give out that number, 312-332-7800, or better yet, WGN at AskKarenConti.com. We still have time for your legal questions. Give us a call here, 312-981-7200. This day in legal history, July 10th. What happened this day in legal history? 1979, Chuck Berry was sentenced to 4 months for tax evasion. 1975, Cher filed for divorce from Greg Allman 10 days after they were married. 1962, Martin Luther King Jr. was arrested during a demonstration in Georgia. And going all the way back to 1040, Lady Godiva rode naked on horseback to force her husband, the Earl of Mercia, to lower taxes. That's the idea of taxes costing you the shirt off your back kind of thing. Anyway, taking your legal questions here, 312-981-7200. Let's go. Hi, Tom. Welcome to WGN. What's your question?
Oh, hi, Karen.
Hi.
I got a question for you. But before that, just an observation I made. Something just hit me that while listening to your show today, and just outstanding guest, that the people who tend to be the most emphatic or dogmatic about Roe versus Wade and against women's rights, they're more pro-birth than pro-life, meaning that once a child is born, it's like those are also the ones that tend to not want to give, you know, food health or food program, health insurance, daycare, to give the child a chance to better be raised in a correct fashion. It's almost like once they're born, it's like, well, too bad, so sad, you're out of luck. So it's more of a pro-birth.
Tom, I'm going to interject, and then I want to ask your question. And I don't. It's really tough for me to get political here because I try really hard as a legal commentator and analyst to try to just focus on the law and explaining the law rather than taking a position, because God knows I have enough opinions of my own. But I said this right from the beginning, that I'm wondering if the states where they're going to take away a woman's right to choose, if they're going to prop up those child support laws, if they're going to prop up the right to daycare and affordable daycare for women who are probably can't afford to have that child, you know, and maybe did, right? Because now we're going to have children who maybe are not, I'm not saying wanted, but children who probably wouldn't have been born otherwise. And the law needs to recognize that, and the law needs to do something about it. And you're right in that, I think, and I guess I'm just going to read into it to say we should be looking at those issues too.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Kirk. But my question was, when it comes to each state having their own choice to strengthen their own rules, like in Illinois. Is it the governor who has the final say on that, or is it this, each state has its representatives that determine the rule? In other words, who has more power? So, for example, if you have a Republican governor, let's say, but then you have a Democratic House, which has the final say?
Well, it's all about the laws, and the laws are left to the legislators. So the legislators are going to be free to make abortion completely illegal, to regulate abortion in any way that they want. Or in Illinois, for instance, the legislature passed a law several years ago that protects a woman's right to choose, meaning that there is a law in the book saying we can't restrict that woman's right. So the laws will be all over the board, and they will be based upon the laws that are written by the elected officials.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom. Right. I appreciate your comments and your question. All right. You have a good rest of your afternoon. Let's go. Sorry about that, Andrew. Sorry. Can we? Yeah, there we go. All right. Joanne. Let's go to Joanne. Welcome to WGN. What's your legal question?
Yes. I have a trust. I have only one daughter. And at the lawyer's suggestion, when I updated my trust, he said, why don't you make your would you want to make your daughter your co-trustee? What does that mean or entail?
Your co-trustee.
Maybe I'm using the wrong word, but what I understood is that even if I'm alive, if I was, you know, like mentally was not able to take care of myself or whatever, that without going back to a lawyer, that she would have the authority to do things.
Yeah, this is not quite making sense to me because the way to do that, I'm not an estate planning lawyer, but normally the way to do that is you have a power of attorney. And the power of attorney gives that person the right to transact business or make medical decisions on your behalf if you're not able to do it. So I would think that those powers of attorney could be done separately from that trust, so that when you are deceased, then the trust kicks in and your daughter would be the trustee, and she would act, as I was telling the other listener, she would look at that trust and you would direct her to what should be done with your assets and your debts and who the money is to be distributed to. So
okay,
maybe we have like using the different words, but it makes sense that your daughter would be your power of attorney for both health care and financial decisions. Yeah.
She is. So,
yeah.
All right. It must be the way I understood it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and, you know, ask your lawyer that. I mean, it's a good question. If your lawyer is using that term, just ask your lawyer to define what he or she means. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
All
again.
Right. You take care. All right. Let's go to Ron. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
Okay. I have a common problem. What should I do with a landlord that doesn't fix anything? I know I can go to City Hall, but then I would face retribution by him raising the rent. So what would be...
What kinds of things is your landlord not fixing?
Well, I had water damage in our bathroom. The ceiling has a lot of holes in it, and... the screen door needs to be fixed, the refrigerator, the washer and dryers in the laundry room are not working properly.
Yeah, this is a tough one because, you know, unless it's something that is sort of life-threatening or water is, you know, you're up to your knees in water, right. You really can't, I mean, you could take self-help and you could get it fixed yourself and deduct it from the rent, but he may or may not have, you know, he may or may not go after you for that. I would definitely put everything in writing. Don't just make the phone call. A lot of people make that mistake where they're calling and then there's no proof that you've actually complained about it. I think I would take pictures. I would send them. And when I say in writing, I mean email is just as good as writing. And say, I've reported this to you, landlord, 10 different times. The screen door is allowing... you know, bugs to come in, there's a hole in the ceiling, I need this fixed. Are there other tenants who have the same problem, or are you not in a building that has other tenants?
Yeah, there's other tenants. They have basically the same kind of problem. See, we have like an absentee landlord. He maybe comes here around here once a month, if at all.
Yeah. Well, I think strength in numbers. I think you should get all of your co-tenants together and make these complaints and make them, you know, in writing and with well, like I said, with photographs and proof of what's going on. And I don't know, I guess you can call the authorities in your municipality to see if they can cite the building for these violations. And in so doing, that takes it out of your hands. And it's now a matter of something that the landlord would have to do. Otherwise, the landlord would be fined. I don't know if those damages and those repairs really rise to the level of something that could be cited. But certainly you could try that. I know what you said. You said you think that they're going to retaliate, the landlord will retaliate. Right. But that's what you face. And then, of course, the other option, of course, is not illegal. Legal advice, but maybe you look for another place to live because it sounds like your landlord has absolutely no intention of taking care of this.
No. Okay. Thank
All right. You. Well, good luck. All right. Well, thanks to my guest. Everyone have a wonderful week. We'll be back next Sunday with more legal talk on the Karen Conti Show. Stay tuned for Rick Hogan, the fabulous Rick Hogan, up next.